You've been answering questions about this film for 6 months, so yeah. What's the worst question you've been asked about the film?
The worst question really comes from the attitude of the asker, and it usually comes in the form of, what was your inspiration for the film? It's like...
Or, no, it's this. What was your inspiration for the film?
Yeah, exactly. Because, first of all, an interview is only as good as both parties are willing to give to the interview, and that includes the interviewer. So, when they give you nothing and they just expect you to regurgitate something that is not only online in 40 different forms, but is in the press notes in front of them.
Yeah.
We appreciate when people are here, you know, asking us questions. They want to help us, and they want to help movies like this get out into the world, and
sometimes they do.
But yeah, uninspired would be the word that, you know, is tough for us to deal with, and that goes for the interviews and goes into our movies and everything, you know.
Yeah.
That was my first question.
God.
No, it's funny because I watched This Is John. It's a guy who's doing an answering machine message that's seemingly be effortless, and yet there's all this blood, sweat, and tears, and he ends up crying on the floor by the end of it. And I was wondering how similar to filmmaking you think that film is, especially your films, which come off as so naturalistic and so...
off the cuff.
Yeah. That there's so much more that goes into it behind
You're an astute young man.
Yes, you are, and we appreciate that.
We appreciate that.
I mean,
you validate our pain, my
you
friend.
You do. Because normally what we get is, boy, it just must have been a great time to make that movie with those guys. They're so funny. It must have been great, right?
Yeah, I think...
Yet you end up on the floor with a glass of wine.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it is fair that people assume that we're out smoking pot and having fun with our friends. It does kind of look like that sometimes, you know? But as all good thrift store shoppers know, it takes a lot of great care to make your look that disheveled.
You know? That's right.
And extra money and time and blood, sweat, and tears. So, you know, I think This Is John was... It's interesting you say that because that was the first movie we ever made that we thought was decent. And that came out of pure...
life pain.
Desperation. And we were... trying so hard to make a good movie for so long, and we felt so far away from it. And when that moment kind of happened with This Is John, we didn't plan any of that. It was very spontaneous and very instinctual. And it definitely came out of where we were at in our lives at that point. You know, we didn't plan that was going to be our model of filmmaking, but we've used that model a lot. Let's improvise. Let's take stock of where the actors are personally in their lives, and let's let them bring things to the character that they might be passionate about in the moment or sensitive to that could give us a great performance, you know.
And leaping forward 7-8 years now to Cyrus, how much did that play into your casting, seeing where people are in their lives and being able to play into that?
I mean, that's a big part of it is just Mark and I using our instincts when we're creating a script and creating a story idea. It started with just imagining John C. Reilly in this position. And, you know, we knew him slightly personally and had watched him for years and years. And we're huge fans, but also, more specifically, we knew the way that we shoot, you know, the person who was playing that role is going to come through. It's going to happen. And you got to be ready to receive that. And every time we imagined John doing one of these things, everything got a little funnier and a little more emotional and a little bit more tragic, and all the elements that we try to cull in our movies just kept expanding when we imagined him in it, so much so that a few months into creating the story, we were like, I don't think we can make this movie if John doesn't do this movie. So, you know.
Yeah, and in terms of Jonah, there's a side of Jonah that not a lot of people see, which is a dark side to him. He's extremely intelligent. He's a student of the human condition. You know, he's one of these people you sit on a park bench with, and you look at people, and you can just party with him for hours, talking about the strange little intricacies of people. And that's what Jay and I do, and that's what our movies come out of, you know. And his desire to do something different with us, gung-ho, you know, he's like that freshman on the team who's just ready to rock. I mean, it was really infectious on the movie. He really was the guy on the movie. It was just like, you know, when times are hard and when it's looking like this improvisation might not be leading us somewhere particularly great in the moment, like, he was a real believer, you know. It's kind of like the mascot, you know.
Now, you're talking a lot about the collaboration on the film set, but also the collaboration that you've had in the past with the Zellner brothers, like David edited This Is John, and you guys came up at a similar time, both pairs of brothers. How much did you feed into each other, your own development, bouncing off those guys and other people in Austin?
I mean, I think Austin at large is probably the greater context of what you're talking about. It was everything for us. I mean, you know, we... we grew up in New Orleans. It's a very third world type city, and you just never dream that you could actually be a filmmaker, you know, for a living. Like, you know, that's just something that, like, weird people do. We don't know how you get there. We went to Austin for college, and, you know, we were highly influenced by Robert Rodriguez and Richard Linklater and Slacker, and filmmaking at that time was a totally DIY aesthetic. Even before digital filmmaking, it was very DIY in Austin and just doing things at no cost. It was just like, okay, we have to buy film. We're going to buy film, and then we're going to sneak onto University of Texas campus, and we're going to edit it. That's been the ethic there forever. And so, you know, along with all of our friends, we've always just worked together, and it's always been a quest to find our voices and to have something to say and have something to offer. And we were really jealous of the Zeldin brothers early on because they had seemed to find their thing a lot earlier than us.
Yeah, they knew themselves and were self-aware of what made them good much earlier than us. You know?
Yeah, I think it just took them a lot longer to cultivate a following because they're so much weirder and more interesting than we are.
Yes.
But it takes a while. You know.
Awesome jetsam. I mean, it's like, yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Beautiful.
I mean,
it's strange.
Beautiful, awesome. Weird, amazing, moving pieces of art. I think in 20 years, people will look back at them and they'll be like, they can do it all. They're experimental, their narrative, yeah. Their aesthetic. And honestly, the great thing about Austin, too, is it's so cheap to live there.
Or it was at the time.
It was at the time that you really could work a part-time job, eat peanut butter and jelly, and make movies on the weekends. And
yeah,
you know.
We used to edit a TV show for a church, like 15 hours a week, and that was enough money for us to do our thing. It was a great place to come up securely and safely.
I think the best thing about it is, you know, what we always tell young filmmakers is making movies is incredibly hard, and there's this weird mythology created sometime around the early 90s that, you know, you wake up one day and you make a movie and you either have it or you don't. And Mark and I don't believe that at all. We believe it's a really complex form, and in our case, it took us 8 to 10 years before we made something that we really felt like we could take the tape in hand, hand it to someone and say, this is us. This is something that we're proud of. And, you know, it takes a long time to get to that point. So
at least for us, it did. Yeah.
That climate in Austin totally allowed us to fail a lot and continue on.
Mm-hmm. You talked about the influence of Richard Linklater on your work and the inspiration that he's provided. Since The Puffy Chair came out, you guys have had that success, and now you're releasing a studio film for the first time. Have you had anybody come up to you who's had a film at Sundance that said that it was similarly with you and Linklater, that they said The Puffy Chair was their inspiration? Have you had any?
We haven't had that extreme type of stuff. Basically, no one worships us the way we worship Linklater. I mean, that's just, you know, that's just weird. But we've gotten, you know.
I think he's making me realize that it has happened.
Of course it has happened. Yeah, we have people come up and The Puffy Chair is used in film schools now as a model for how you can do it cheaply and still, you know, get it out there. And
when it happens to you, though, it feels like a fluke. It feels like, well, you know, that was just a little weird
How did he figure that out?
Yeah, that's just Puffy Chair was a weird thing that happened in 2004 and 2005. They're using it as an example because it's kind of a fluke type thing, and then, you know, we'll move on from there, but they still talk about it.
It feels amazing.
It feels pretty good.
And I am not afraid to admit, though slightly ashamed, that I Google myself, and I see people writing things about us, and I get really proud and happy.
You have yourself on Google Alerts?
I have a Google Alert for myself.
There's nothing but look, you know, it's how you find out if somebody's interested in your work, too. Like,
no,
you know,
it's pure vanity.
Okay, well, then, yes, I will grant you that.
I appreciate the help with the rationalization and justification, but let's just call it what it is.
Yeah, well, I've got a very large mirror in the back.
Yeah, exactly. You want.
I saw you talking about the 30-minute walks, and you said to the studio initially, okay, well, we're going to go on these 30-minute walks and kind of discover because it's part of your process, and then they got nervous. How do you stay true to your own aesthetic while also working within a studio system in terms of your own process?
I mean, the good news is that Fox Searchlight and that kind of studio generally wants to make these kinds of movies. So whenever anything came up with us in terms of growing pains, it was usually an issue about communication. And Jay and I have worked so insularly for so long that we never had to really communicate what we're doing. We know each other. The former cast and crew of our movies were our family and friends, and, you know, there are some very specifically different things in our movie that we find are alarming to studio people. 5 hours of dailies. If the scene's not working, we're gonna take a break. You know, handheld camera work, improvising the script. Those are things that legitimately would make anybody funding your movie
camera
a little nervous.
walks across room, turns around, and shoots something else. And
shoots something else in the middle of a take.
Yes. You know?
So we don't have an expectation that a studio should just lay down. And so it really was a question of Fox Searchlight coming to us enough to trust and understand that they hired us to make this movie. We're going to take care of it. No one's going to be harder on this movie than we are. And us coming a step to them and saying, I know our process is specific. Let me take the time to explain this to you and really sit down and walk you through this. And once we figured that out, everything was great.
Wrapping up, you're working with Jason Reitman, very indie for a while, made a lot of shorts like you guys did. Yeah. What have you learned from him as he was helping shepherd this next project along? And how far along is it?
We just wrapped a couple of weeks ago, so we're just getting into post. Jason was really, really great and respectful of us. He, you know, we make different kinds of movies, you know, and he loves what we do, and he doesn't pretend to know how to make what we do. And he was just basically in a position to say, you guys make movies that are really critically praised and are amazing, and the truth is none of our movies have really made any money. Jason Reitman's movies have been very successful. And he was willing to use that power to help protect us and say, look, these guys will make a movie and I will, you know, I'll be there to prove that to you. You know, he was in, I don't want to say our bodyguard, but he was vouching for us, you know, in the money world. And it was incredibly, not only brave, but cool of him to do that for us.
And not only that, but like, when you're on set and you're directing a movie and pretty much the hottest director in the world is in the next room watching you direct, you would probably normally be shitting your pants because you're so nervous about it, but he has
like,
a
when
way...
When is he going to tag us out?
Yeah, when is it? Because, I mean, obviously you can do this better than us, right? You know, and he was totally the opposite. I mean, just his attitude about it and his genuine respect for what we do and his curiosity, I mean... The guy is like...
He's a fan.
I mean, he really is. He's an appreciator and respects the differences, and that kind of blew us away. I mean, it was really... It helped us be our best.
Cool. Well, congratulations on Cyrus, and good luck as it goes out into theaters.
Thanks, awesome. Dude. Appreciate the interview, man.
Yeah, totally.
Really.
See you, Ron.
It was nice.